In episode 37 of MobiCast, we discuss the process of becoming AWS certified and include a few tips on how to prepare and pass the exam. Welcome to MobiCast, a weekly conversation about containerization, Docker, and modern software deployment. Let's jump right in.
Welcome to another episode of MobiCast. Welcome, Chris. Welcome, Rich.
Hey. Hey, guys.
So, Rich, what have you been up to?
We're heading towards the end of the year, and we got a couple of projects that are with anticipated launches before the end of the year. So just sort of navigating that world, the crunch time of you know, the end of the year closing in. That's pretty much it, and probably be like that for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Same here. There's always that crunch time at the end of the year. It's like demos and conferences are happening at the beginning of the year, and people want their software finished. What about you, Chris? What have you been up to?
I'm just trying to stay out of trouble. So really, really busy with various projects, and have been busy lately just preparing for and taking another certification exam, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, very cool. I'm so stoked that you got another certification a couple days ago. And I, too, am working towards my very first certification. So you've got a bucket, you've got a hat trick worth of certifications now, right, Chris?
I do. This was number three.
Right on. And yeah, I'll be getting my first, hopefully at reInvent, unless I fail, which is a real possibility. So let's not rule that out.
But hopefully after today's podcast, you'll have some tips and tricks that will make that less likely of a possibility.
Exactly. So yeah, let's just start talking about certification in general. Maybe give us the 101, Chris.
Sure. Yeah. So like a lot of other large companies in the industry that, you have folks that are working as consultants or vendors in that space, certifications are a really great way of kind of like establishing just baseline knowledge, mastery of various topics and areas in those specialties, and having a certification to say, yep, this person has that knowledge and is the right person to work with to do that specific field of work. So AWS has its own certification program. There's 9 certificates now in their program with all various different levels and covering all the various topics as well. Like we've talked about in previous episodes, how AWS is so large and so many services, and they keep innovating and throwing new stuff at you. And so likewise, their certification program seems to continue to grow and it keeps getting bigger as well. Just to reflect the fact that there's just more and more stuff to know. And so for each one of these certification programs that they have, it starts off with an exam with a blueprint. And that blueprint is really just an outline, right? It's a syllabus for like, this is the material that this certification is going to cover. So someone that takes this exam, passes this exam, they are going to be masterful in accordance with that blueprint, that outline of knowledge of the various services and techniques and principles that are outlined in that blueprint. See, there are 4 different types of certification. So you have foundational level. Currently, there's one at the foundational level, and that's the cloud practitioner certificate. And so this is really the kind of the entry level. It covers a very broad scope of the various AWS services, and it also does not go very deep, right? So very foundational. It's kind of a great way for anyone to start in their process of becoming AWS certified, start with a cloud practitioner.
I've noticed, I did a practice test of a cloud practitioner at one point, and I noticed, I mean, I've spent a lot of time around AWS. I've been using it for years. I never had really studied it other than, you know, what I've learned from you throughout these MobiCasts and in my own usage, but never actually applied myself to studying it. And I discovered that in a practice test on the cloud practitioner, I would have been likely to pass that certificate. So it definitely is sort of very general knowledge about how AWS works. And if you have some experience around it, probably don't need much study on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like if you've been using AWS for a year or two and you've actually gotten your hands dirty and actually built some things with it, and you know how to, like, you know, what VPCs are and how to kind of basic setup with them, and you understand IAM and, you know, S3 and RDS and whatnot. If you have that basic foundational knowledge, you'll do just fine on the cloud practitioner one, right? So that's the foundational level. The next level up is the associate level. There are three certificates at that level. So they have one for solution architect, one for developer, and one for a sysop. And so each one of those are covering, you know, different facets of the various domains. Solution architect is more broad based and definitely concentrating on overall architecture of, like, applications running in the AWS cloud and what are the best practices and principles to you there, and what are the major components you use. So things like VPC and S3 and RDS and IIM, kind of understand a little bit about hybrid, so on-prem and cloud working together. That's the kind of material I cover with that. Developer, obviously more developer focused. So like the API calls, kind of the developer building block services like SQS and things like getting deeper into databases like Dynamo and whatnot. And then sysop is obviously something more for system administrators. So a lot of the just management aspects of running cloud services and security and provisioning and just overall health of that. So definitely a very broad-based exam of all the various tools and management apps that you can use and for provisioning and monitoring and optimizing your cloud architecture. And so that's the associate level. Then above that is the professional level. And so this is definitely a big step up from the associate level. There's two professional level certificates, one for solution architect and the other one is for DevOps. So the DevOps is really kind of a combination, obviously, from the developer and then the sysop. And then the solution architect, definitely a step up from the solution architect at the associate level. So these, the associate level is really kind of demonstrating more like just the basic knowledge and understanding of the services, versus the pro level is kind of more about like applying that knowledge. So the just questions are much more in depth. And again, it's really kind of gauging your ability to apply the knowledge, you know, not just to kind of repeat it back and show that you understand it. And then the last type of certificate is the specialty certificates. So these are, there's three of them currently. There's one for security, there's one for advanced networking, and there's one for big data. And so these are very, obviously very narrow in scope, but they go extremely deep. So, you know, if you're taking the security specialty exam, you know, you're going to know everything about security inside and out inside of AWS. And likewise for the other two. So they're really good add-ons for when you want to specialize in a particular domain.
So that's a pretty good overview of all the different types of certifications. The reason that we started down the path of getting these certifications, it's not, you know, it wasn't really for any other reason than it was a requirement for Kelsis to level up in the AWS partner program. And as a company, we felt like being AWS partners could lead to us, like, just frankly, a better sales pipeline. And it may at some point, but at this point, you know, we're still on that journey. So, and the journey involves lots of AWS certification. So I think that's one of the, for consulting companies in particular, I think that's one of the main reasons that they go down this path. But there are probably a few other reasons that are, you know, for individuals, there are other reasons that you would get certified. Like, you know, like you said at the beginning, just demonstrating your skill in a particular area. Can you think of any other sort of major blanket reasons on why you would get certified?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that personally that I, the reason why I'm motivated to do that is because it really is a useful process in that it's forcing you to learn about other services and features that perhaps you haven't used. And so it makes your AWS knowledge much more complete. Like, again, we've talked time and time again about how new services are being rolled out all the time. Existing services are continually evolving and really changing pretty rapidly. And it's so easy for us just to kind of get stuck in a rut, stay with what's comfortable. And you know, if you're not careful, you're going to find out that like you're way behind, you know, a year down the road type thing. So doing these exams kind of really forces you to stay, you know, just top of mind on this stuff, learn about things that you, maybe didn't know about, you maybe heard people whisper about and you kind of a vague idea, but not really understanding what it is. Going through this process will really force that issue for you.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's a really great point. And as I've started to go through this process, I've realized that that's true too. I will say to listeners out there that, it, you know, you may have the experience of, oh, we're going to use this service. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's like Cognito. You're going to use Cognito to do some user stuff with your mobile app. If you've made that decision, you know you're going to do that, it is absolutely okay to go and figure out Cognito on the fly and use it, and you'll succeed. You'll be fine. You'll create a service that works. There may be a few times where you're surprised, like, oh gosh, why isn't this working the way I expected? But you'll get through it. But what Chris is getting at is something kind of different. And I think it's kind of unique to AWS, and it's purely because of its size, is that as I've been going through this, I've been like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. Or, you know, what a way to move this amount of data around or secure something in that way or just run workloads in ways that I hadn't thought of before. And it's just because I had a lack of awareness of some of the things that you could do. And now that I have that awareness, I feel like while I could have architected a perfectly valid system that did what it was supposed to do before, now I can architect the same system with much more confidence that I'm doing it effectively. And, you know, the least cost and the most availability. And I just don't have to worry that I'm making mistakes or that I'm going to have any gotchas. So the certification really kind of gets you exposed to enough stuff that it gives you some confidence. If you already have all the other skills of being a good, solid developer and architect, this will push you over the top and make you comfortable inside of AWS, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is one of those things where it just does not feel like it's a rote task where you're just jumping through some hoops for, you know, a piece of paper. This is actually, it's enriching, and it's, you're just going to get better from it. So, from that standpoint, it's been really, just really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is Rich. Please pardon this quick interruption. We recently passed an internal milestone of 10,000 listens, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you for the support. I was also hoping to encourage you to head on over to iTunes and leave us a review or a rating. Positive feedback and constructive criticism are both incredibly important to us. So give us an idea of how we're doing, and we'll promise to keep publishing new episodes every week. All right, let's dive back in.
So this may actually be a good point, a good place, since we're talking about why and what it's like, a good place for me to mention a couple of things that were surprising to me as I've been studying. So I'm studying for my solutions architect associate. It's a lot harder than I expected it to be. There's just more, you know, it's this struggle between, oh my God, there's just a lot to memorize, and actually knowing this stuff is useful. Because I sort of am always anti-memorization where possible. But sometimes, you know, just having this stuff in your head makes it so you can save time later on down the road. And I think some of the examples of this are kind of come from some of the questions. So I took a practice test, and I noticed that a lot of the test questions, I was like, oh yeah, I get this. I understand what they're asking. And I can kind of make an intuitive guess at how it should work. So here's one example. AWS has a thing called a well-architected applications, and it's just like a set of pillars that they say, you know, if you follow these pillars, you can feel comfortable that your application is well-architected. And the test questions, like, below are some possible well-architected pillars. What are actually four of them? And it said security, reliability, performance efficiency, cost optimization, and availability. And I was like, Oh my God. Yeah. AWS, they talk about availability so much. So that's obviously one. Performance efficiency sounds good. Reliability sounds good. Security also, of course. And I was like, probably not cost optimization because, you know, that's important, but it's not really a key, you know, and it's just in my mind, I was like, that's not really that much of a key to like the actual software and the architecture. But I was wrong. The one that's not in there is availability. So it's just like a little bit of a, huh, you know, you got to know this stuff. I think a better example, though, is one on SNS. So I was asking questions about SNS, and there were several different options for SNS. And you had to choose which ones that SNS guaranteed. And I remember seeing one option was like, you know, it guarantees that messages will be received in a certain order and that there's guaranteed to be no duplicates. And another option was they're not guaranteed to be in a certain order, but there's guaranteed to be no duplicates. And I was like, you know, if I was designing a queue system, that's what I would go for. I would say, yeah, we can't really guarantee the order because this is distributed and maybe things will come in kind of weird order, but we can definitely make sure that you don't have to worry about duplicates. And I was like, whoa, that's actually wrong. It doesn't guarantee that there's no duplicates. And like, knowing that you might have duplicates in advance of writing your system and then testing it and then getting surprised when you get duplicates is going to save you a ton of time when you're actually working on your system. So those are just two examples out of literally dozens of things where the thing that you feel like the answer that you feel like might be intuitive is not necessarily the right answer. And I kind of, just to make one more value statement about AWS, I kind of feel like that's, it comes out of AWS's whole wacky user experience in the first place. Like, it's not an intuitive user experience in the console. And I think that that lack of intuition, like the lack of, oh, I bet it works like this, kind of is everywhere inside of AWS. And they often will make choices where the way that AWS works is really based on how it's put together and what's most efficient and not necessarily on how you would expect it to work. So, soapbox over.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the really useful things of going through this process and you know, studying for an exam and taking it and passing it, is that you are kind of forced to understand the nuances and the gotchas mm-hmm. of these things. So kind of understanding, yeah, what your options are with SQS and what a visibility timeout is, and you know, is it possible that messages can be received more than once? And do you have that guarantee? And what about order of delivery? You know, what are the options there versus something like, you know, SNS that does guarantee, you know, single delivery of messages, right? But it's a different technique. So going through this process really, again, forces that issue. You learn about it and it's like, oh, okay. It rounds you out, right? Like before right. You may have been at like 80% level and now this takes you up to like 92% or 93%.
Right. And you spend like 10 or 15 hours studying for the exam instead of like 25 to 32 hours troubleshooting your broken system.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Again, coming right back to the fact like this is actually useful, right? This, mm-hmm. it's really not just for the sake of saying like, hey, I'm certified. It's actually, right. you're becoming much better and becoming more valuable with your skill set.
Right. Yeah. All right. Should we talk about, are we ready to talk about preparation?
I think so. I mean, we've covered kind of like the basics of what AWS certification is, the various types and the kind of the material that it covers. So yeah, maybe we should talk a little bit about just preparation and kind of what that looks like. And so maybe first and foremost, I mean, definitely the foundation here is real world experience with AWS. So like maybe you can do it with cloud practitioner, but like I definitely would not take any of the other exams without actually just hands-on experience of using AWS. I mean, so otherwise, like why would you be doing this to begin with, right? You're probably taking it for the wrong reasons. So
right.
Would definitely stress, you know, that you have been using AWS. And then also as you go through the process of preparing, like go in and use AWS to brush up on the areas that are new to you, right? And play around with them and experiment with them and you know, build some prototypes and you know, really understand how they work. Like there's no substitute for actually using the services themselves. So that's definitely a foundational aspect of preparation. And then beyond that, I mean, obviously, you know, we talked about the exam blueprint. So really kind of understanding what the, you know, reading the blueprint, understanding the material that's being covered. And then, you know, there are some options for training. So, you know, AWS has its own AWS led training courses. They're pretty, pretty pricey. But you know, you are getting it from the experts. And there is the opportunity there to, you know, have someone that you can ask questions of, real time. So that's an option for folks that where that might be, something that they prefer. Me personally, I've found some online courses have been just perfect for this. And in particular, I really like A-Cloud Guru. This is a company that really has built themselves into a pretty big business now, really focused around certification exams and specific. I think they did start with AWS and now they branched out into different, like Google and Azure as well. But I think they started with AWS, and it really was about just like the certification process and put together courses that were really aimed at like helping you prepare for these certification exams, and passing them. And I have to say, like, I've used it now for all of the exams that I've taken, and they're uncanny in really making sure they give you exactly what it is that you need and what you should be focusing on for the exam itself. So for me, it's this is like a non-negotiable in preparing for the exam, right? Go through, take the associated Cloud Guru course for it, and can almost guarantee if you go through all that material and understand it and retain it, you will pass the exam. I mean, I don't think I've yet come across in taking one of the exams and material where it's like, oh, that wasn't really covered in the Cloud Guru course. It's almost always been the opposite. It's like, wow, this is like a really obscure question, but they really stress this in the Cloud Guru course, you know? So you know, like I just took the SysOps exam, and, you know, one of the things in the Cloud Guru course that they kind of made they hammered home was just the difference between with encryption keys. KMS only supports symmetric keys versus if you need asymmetric key, so basically public key, private key type scenarios, then you have to use Cloud HSM, which is it's a hardware security module offering, and it's not multi-tenant, it's single tenant. So if you need to bring your own keys and you need it to be asymmetric, like Cloud HSM is the only way to go. Kind of feels a little obscure, although I guess, you know, for especially on-prem folks or people that have existing security requirements, like maybe not so obscure, but for us, and definitely for myself, like that was a bit obscure, but there was absolutely a question on the exam specifically to that point. Like,
well, and it kind of goes back to the point I was making for 25 minutes when I was on my soapbox. It's like, if you don't know that and you go architect the system that depends on KMS, and then you get like halfway through and you're like, oh my God, we can't use our keys.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. A big whoopsie that you really don't want to have for sure.
Right.
So, yeah. And there's other online courses out there, but, again, I can't stress, how happy I've been with A-Cloud Guru and, really clear, concise instruction, and, definitely check it out. Other sources of preparation. AWS has a bunch of white papers, really good white papers. I think it's probably just there's maybe up to about 100 of these now. So obviously you don't have to go look at all of them, but there are some pretty foundational relevant and ones that are more relevant to the exam that you're taking. So check those out. The FAQs that they have for each one of the services are a great source of material for studying. So definitely things like the S3 FAQ, like, look at that. You should really know that inside and out. Same thing with EC2, IAM, VPCs, like those FAQs are definitely very, very useful in preparing for the exam. And then take take the practice exams that are available. I think John, you mentioned you took the practice exam to kind of just as a great way of just seeing where you stand, and get an idea for the types of questions, that they're going to be asking on these exams. And you know, it's a really great part of the process. So, you know, go do some preparation. Once you feel like you're ready, take the practice exam and see where you stand.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, I think that with the A Cloud Guru courses, you could just jump right in and just start going through that material without taking a practice exam, and then hold off and take it after you've been through some of that material. But in general, sort of in my life, when studying for things, if there ever is a practice exam, it's always been take the practice exam first, figure out what you need to know, and then go study that, as opposed to start studying, then take a practice exam, and then study more. But yeah, the A Cloud Guru stuff is so right on point that it could be argued that, like, unless you know what you're doing, you're definitely going to need to kind of study across everything. So might as well not waste your money failing a practice exam until you're at least a little ready. Oh, and A Cloud Guru also has like a beta exam
simulator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can do that if you're a member of A Cloud Guru. If you buy your membership, you can do that as many times as you want for free. So, so that's another way to kind of take the temperature of your knowledge before spending too much time trying to learn.
Indeed, yes. I have not had a chance yet to play with that, but I plan to. Good.
Yeah.
Cool. So we've talked about preparation. Maybe just real quick about the exam itself. So all these exams are administered by a third party. Currently it's PSI. And so you'll go online, you'll schedule your exam when you're ready. You'll pay your exam fee at that time. You'll pick your time and date. And then when the date comes, you'll go to that on-site facility. And they're pretty strict on the rules for this. So, you know, obviously, I mean, it's just short of a strip search, you know, going into this place. So you can't, you know, obviously things like watches and phones and all that kind of stuff, books, pieces of paper, all that is not allowed. So you'll hand over all your personal belongings. They'll put it into a locked bag, and you get to take the bag with you, but so you don't have to worry about your valuables being in someone else's hands, but it is in a locked bag that you can't access. Can't wear big coats or jackets. This time around when I did it, I was wearing a very light jacket, and during the exam I decided I was gonna get a little warm, so I took it off, put it on the back of my chair, and they came over and interrupted me a few minutes later saying, you know, sorry, if you're gonna take that off, can't be in the room. You gotta get up and go move it into outside the exam room.
Well, so did you put it back on?
I almost did. I was like, seriously? It's like, so I was just like, whatever. I'm like, you know, I'm in your world. Kind of feel like you're the warden and I'm the inmate. So I'm just,
right.
I'm gonna, mind my P's and Q's. So, I did go, outside the room and hang out my jacket and came back in and finished the exam. So, and I get it. I mean, you know, you obviously want to have a very controlled environment and make sure that folks aren't cheating and, make sure that it's fair and equitable and whatnot. So, I get it. It definitely kind of puts a little damper on the whole process, right? You kind of feel a little bit like you're, like a criminal almost.
Right. Though. Right. Not a trusted person.
Yeah. So that's something to expect there. If you go to an on-site facility to do it, the other, like if you are at reInvent, they have so many opportunities. It's 5 days worth, I think, of exams that you can take there on-site. And definitely a much different experience just from like atmosphere and energy level. So again, I've taken the exams on-site at PSI and then also at reInvent, and hands down, taking it at reInvent was so much better.
I want the executive experience where as I'm walking from one venue to another, they just send someone with me to ask me the questions.
Yeah.
So, and I'm excited to take it at reInvent too, based on your advice. I do want to say that given the what I've seen out of our own team, and hopefully they're listening to this, it's a good idea to just get it scheduled. Just put it on the schedule. If you know you're going to do it, put it a month out, 2 months out, whatever you feel like you need to, in order to have the confidence that you're going to study for it. If you put it 2 months out, my guess is you probably won't really start studying until you're about 3 weeks out. So why bother? You know, everybody needs that time pressure. So just get it on the schedule. Don't say, I'm going to study for this until I feel comfortable, and then I'm going to schedule it, because then you'll never get to it. And it's not a good strategy in life.
Great, great point. So it's like, and that's what I've been telling folks as well. And then I took my own medicine. So like, it's been on my to-do list to get a few more certifications under my belt for the whole year. And it's just, I keep saying, oh, I should do it. I should do it. And you know, every day is busy and comes and goes, and it's like, oh, we'll do it tomorrow. And just today becomes tomorrow, and tomorrow becomes the next day, and whatnot. So, yeah, like about 2 weeks ago, I was like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and schedule it, forcing function. And so I gave myself 2 weeks, and, yeah, that kind of puts a fire under you, and gets it done.
Absolutely. I think that's unless you had anything else, I think that's a great kind of thing to leave people with.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. Thanks for sticking with us and listening to a little longer episode than usual, but we had a lot to cover, and, talk to you again next week.
All right. Thank you.
Guys.
See you guys.
Bye.
Well, dear listener, you made it to the end. We appreciate your time and invite you to continue the conversation with us online. This episode, along with show notes and other valuable resources, is available at mobicast.fm/37. If you have any questions or additional insights, we encourage you to leave us a comment there. Thank you. And we'll see you again next week.